about what Portland Cop Watch is doing or learn about its history, where can they go to find out about the history of Portland Cop Watch?
They can find the website at portlandcopwatch.org.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you all. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on Prison Pipeline.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks,
Emma. Thank
Emma.
you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my email. It is often mentioned as one of the most progressive and daring stations that we have in this country. They are not afraid to tell you the truth. So tune in to KBOO Portland and get the real word.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually, they'll go insane.
You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They'll go insane. And eventually...
That's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Do you like discovering new music and reconnecting with some older but perhaps forgotten favorites? Then look no further. Tune into The Listening Room with host Timothy P. every other Thursday at 3 in the morning for a genre-bending 2.5-hour show where you never know what you might hear next, but you will be sure to be engaged and entertained.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen,
never been done to
work talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Want to continue our conversation about the outcome of yesterday's election. Many people feel that it is historic. It's something that may be a pivoting point. It may not be. We had Charles Barron on along with Pastor Mike McBride. And so we got some perspectives and we want to continue that conversation today with two people who are well equipped to break things down. We have Malina Abdullah, fellow journalist and also a professor, organizer. You know her as the head of Black Lives Matter Grassroots, Boots on the Ground. And we also have Kali Nkuno from Cooperation Jackson. Kali, I want to start off with you. You wrote something that I think bears reading. It says, a capital strike in New York City. That is going to be something to behold. The social movements in New York City now have their hands full. I'm hoping that they'll rise to the challenge, and I will do what little I can to help. My greatest fear, however, is that many of the wrong lessons will be learned from a Mamdani victory, particularly those that pretend to that it represents a strategic shift within the apparatus of the Democratic Party. You wrote a little bit more, but I want to build off that. There's a lot of chest pumping and a lot of folks walking around, you know, like we did it, we done did it, tide has changed and good days are coming. And it seems like you're echoing what was echoed yesterday. You better move cautiously, and I'm sure when I read the rest of your thing, these folks ain't gone, they ain't leaving, and be ready for the clapback is probably what is on the agenda. But I'll let you break this down for us, and welcome to the show.
Well, always good to be back, Davey. And yeah, you know, the forces arrayed against Mamdani and the ideas that he represents, they are going to clap back hard, as you put it. The first major thing that they are going to execute fundamentally is going to be a police strike, right? To really corral and discipline him and his administration and set the tone and set the limits. And I'm not speaking speculatively. This is some things that they have already said, they have already stated and written, and have already made very public plans to execute in a number of different ways. And I can speak from my own lived experience in Jackson. You know, in 2017, when Chokwe Antar Lumumba came into office, the police in Jackson executed a police strike, right? The first basically 6 months of his administration. And they went on a tear, right? They killed several young Black men and women in the first couple of months of his administration, and collaborated directly without the mayor's knowledge in supporting ICE and conducting raids in Jackson. And, you know, that's a small city that just proclaimed espousing ideas even further to the left of what Mamdani was putting out, the truth be told. But, you know, people need to understand, like, the third, now put it in context, that the third largest standing army within the United States is the United States Army. Now there's ICE, and then third is NYPD. You know, and that operates as an army. People need to understand that. So that's number one, David. Then number the other piece which concerns me most is there's going to be a major capital strike in New York City, and this is how capital and the capitalist system is first order of disciplining folks who espouse any notion of social democracy or socialist ideas. They strangle you and they strangle your pockets, and they make people suffer within your base by starving them of economic resources and opportunities. That's the next major thing that's going to happen in New York City, and the movements have to realize that and have to start organizing to start serving the people and moving to kind of capture as many of the resources that these capitalists evacuate and put them to use for the people. But that's going to require a major strategic shift in the social movement's thinking and consciousness.
I would add the other thing is the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, announced that they're going to put they're putting together an apparatus of or cadre of people to monitor Mamdani. They call it the Mamdani tracker.
They're not just gonna monitor. They are some of the main people who gonna orchestrate the capital strike. Let's be clear.
Okay. Well, there you have it. I want to say a little something before I bring Malina Abdullah in. about NYPD. And I want to go back to the mid-70s, where there was a threat to economically crippled New York. This is a key point in when hip-hop was starting to form. This is where major decisions were made, and the major decision was around who is going to be fired so that New York City could come into budgetary compliance.
That's right.
And every department lost folks, fire department, everybody. And what NYPD did was very slick. They put out a poster. You could see this poster online. It is called Welcome to Fear City. And inside this pamphlet, it wasn't a poster, but a pamphlet, were six things that anybody visiting New York need to be aware of. And it ranged from do not leave the borough of Manhattan, do not take the train, do not drive a car, crime is rampant. It was a pretty insidious thing. And what the NYPD did was they went to every bus depot and all the airports, including the one in Newark, and handed out these posters, these pamphlets, and scared, you know, basically they disrupted the tourism industry. And New York City capitulated. And that capitulation led to 15,000 school teachers being fired instead of any cops. And, you know, hence many of us grew up without after-school programs, no trade programs, no prom, all that sort of stuff. And that was something that NYPD was quite willing to do. We can move this forward, and I'll bring Melina in, since we're talking about what police will do. We saw up and down the state, you know, especially after George Floyd, that police went on a strike, but it wasn't an official strike, but it was one in which they basically stopped policing. You know, we could call it the blue flu or what have you. Up here in San Francisco and Oakland, they were just like, you know, it's not my problem. And you saw all sorts of things get disrupted. That was a common tactic. In this case, the blue flu led to the recalls, the successful recalls of Chesa Boudin, and it led to, you know, the undermining of Pamela Price's administration as the district attorney and Mayor Sheng Tao. So they have some tools in the toolbox. They may actually do this, you know, official strike, or they may just be like, you know, I'm not, throw my hands up. I have nothing I can do. And so I'm glad you pointed that out, and that's something that we need to be aware of. Melina, let me bring you in. You know, a lot of people are pretty happy about what went on. California was the linchpin with the passage of Prop 50. We talked about the legacy of Gavin Newsom, you know, but I want to get your perspective on things, especially because you're in L.A., and you've seen ICE in operation in a big way in national coverage. You've seen how this administration, the Trump administration, has attempted to cripple and undermine Los Angeles, where you're at, attacking the mayor, who he doesn't like, and really trying to maybe do some of the things that Kali is saying will happen to New York, undermine it in every which way. How are you seeing things? What do we glean from this this victory Tuesday night?
Sure, and I'm glad that you framed it as a victory on Tuesday night, that I think all across the country, but especially on the coasts in California and New York, what you see is a pushback against fascism, a recognition that we have to both vote and organize. And so I spent some time just over the last week going over Mom Donnie's background, and I'm my children, especially my oldest child, was really cautious with me, tried to pull me back and say, you know, look what he said about police. He actually issued this apology and all of that. And yes, then we watched his acceptance speech together. You all know that I'm Muslim, and I know they try to scare people about Islam, but hearing him offer greetings and perfect Arabic drove both me and Tandiway to tears, right? And witnessing what that meant and what he could be for New York was huge, I think, and what he could be for the country is huge. I think on this coast, on the left coast, the passage of Prop 50, which was overwhelmingly passed, is another huge lesson that we take. Prop 50 is a pushback against Trump's gerrymander, right? It is recognizing that, you know, he's trying to gerrymander Texas, and that's happening in Texas, but in California, we can offset it. And I was actually less hopeful that Prop 50 would pass. There was some misinformation around Prop 50, especially Black voters and other voters of color are tentative, tend to be tentative about the drawing of district lines, especially with the Voting Rights Act under attack. And it's amazing, and I know the exact count is continuing to come in, but we're at about 65% voting in favor of Prop 50. How did that happen? And this is the other piece of hope that I think that we should glean. Davey, both you and I are unionized faculty members. Who did the work to pass Prop 50 is labor unions. $23 million. People power. All of us were asked to pound the streets and make sure that we passed Prop 50. And this is another reason why the Trump regime and the radical right is so afraid of labor unions, that there is power in labor unions, not just with will and vision, especially if we push them in the right direction, but also because we have resources and we were able to get things like Prop 50 passed.
Definitely something to think about. And yes, we did see a lot of labor pound the ground. But I think that also underscores what Kali was talking about. You know, they're identifying folks. Oh, labor. Okay. All right. You know, like Denzel voice. All right. And let's go back and really start to strike hard. Kali, you said that with this political landscape, movements, social movements have better, you know, more than just be ready, but also now have to adapt. And I know you and Thandi Chamaringa have been doing a series of Fight Back and Build and Fight Back. You've been talking about, you know, organizing. What are some things that you think immediately need to start happening, both for folks within New York and outside, in the wake of things?
Right now, we need to scale up our work of preparation for the counter strike that the MAGA movement is about to execute. And, you know, they, as you mentioned, they got several tools in their toolkit. They have a leader and a leadership which has no regard for the Constitution whatsoever, no regard for the so-called checks and balances, you know, that exists in the Republican system. You know, their own mouthpiece came out and said that it's a hindrance for there to be co-equal branches of government to move in Trump's agenda. That came out of our own mouth, right? You know, from the podium. So we need to get prepared for the pushback. As you know, I've been on these airways and many others, you know, trying to warn folks. These fascists do not intend on there being any power sharing in the new America that they are trying to construct and enforce on everybody. And if anything, we need to understand that the victories that happen, you know, in New Jersey, in Virginia, in New York, in California, and several other places, they were largely in Democratic strongholds, or places that have largely been Democratic strongholds for the last 50, 60 years. Even Virginia, even though it goes back and forth, it tends to be more Democratic in certain respects than Republican, but it's definitely a swing state. And so there's a lesson that they have learned, that if the game is actually played by the rules, the fair rules, fair as defined by the Constitution, not fair as defined by anything with morality, but if they play by the rules, you know, that their forefathers created, they are going to lose. So they are going to have to change the rules, and they are actively changing the rules, and then they're just going to have to selectively apply force to ensure that the game remains rigged and that they can control it. And so what y'all have heard me say, and I'm going to say it again, they are preparing to either construct a favorable outcome in November 2026 in the next midterms elections. And if they not, if they cannot adequately do that, they are prepared to use force to ensure that there are no elections. And they are planning for both at the same time. So what Melina, you know, talked about with Texas doing the gerrymandering, they have more states that they can gerrymander than the Democrats do. And they are already putting them in motion. Florida, Indiana, Mississippi is starting to head that way, even though fundamentally they don't really need it. They've already done that level of gerrymandering. But most of the Republican-held states, of which there are over 30, many of them are already leaning in that direction. So that's one way that they can ensure that they keep the House in particular, so they can kind of keep rubber stamping, you know, Trump agenda, the Project 2025 and Project Esther. You know, don't forget about that one and what they're trying to do there. The other piece that they're just constructing is building their own domestic force and submitting all of the armed forces under Trump's absolute control and authority. And they are specifically targeting by every stretch by going after the funding of Democratic-controlled states and Democratic-controlled cities, going after polling processes and challenging those. Like, they are clearly setting up, and we just got to put people in mind that mutual aid and a deeper level of self-defense are some of the key components that we have to start preparing for. Now, those, to a degree, we have to recognize are defensive. We have to go now on the offensive, and that is going to be us continuing to apply the pressure in through mass, you know, nonviolent protests, but they need to be more structured around particular demands. So what the No Kings movement did in a broad sense, absolutely, I think, shaped the outcomes that we just saw on Tuesday. But now it's going to have to be much more sharper and draw some clear and distinct lines and come up with some actual demands. And that doesn't shouldn't just be dependent upon the leadership of the No Kings movement. Because of how open it is, all of us in our own respective cities, we need to be raising the particular demands that are going to advance the broad democratic movement in the United States in our local area, and then fight and do the organizing that's going to build the base to move things in the direction that we desire. So there's no getting out of this without some organizing. The organizer just needs to be key and strategic, you know, and that is where we are at. And this is not a moment, you know, as Melina was saying, I know Mom Donnie's father. I've met with him, I've worked with him, you know, with him over the years. He is more to the left, at least publicly, than his son. And so, and his mother is no joke intellectually and movement wise either. So he comes from a hardy stock. I think what people are seeing is him trying to be very pragmatic in moving a number of different things so that he would even be in a position to make some key decisions. So I'm going to give him that benefit of the doubt. But recognize he is arrayed against some mighty forces in New York City. And he's going to have to make some strategic choices about where to bend and where to break and then where to put his foot down. He will be emboldened in not having to compromise if the social movements in New York City take the lead and don't assume that he is in the lead. Right? He can be used to do certain stuff, but if the movements are out there keeping the heat up in the street and doing our organizing and using all the tools at our disposal, be it social media, be it phone calls, be it boycotts, be it, you know, selective utilization of our economic resources. If we are in the lead, then the police force, the forces of capital, they're going to have to bend more in our direction. So it's the movements that got to be in the lead and start preparing and be very clear. And then the last thing I'm going to say, you know, just again, because I think it applies generally, I think he put out some very concrete ideas, but I think there has to be some real deep education that now happens in a place like New York City to get people to understand within the institutions that exist, what are the levers that can be used to implement the programs to make the bus fares free or to make them faster or to create the grocery stores, right, that he's talking about creating. Because he doesn't, as mayor, does not have the power to do all those things on his own, nor does the city council. Some of that in New York City is controlled by the governor. So there's going to have to be some parlay, and that is the parlay is going to have to be the social movement demanding that these happen, and send Hochul, who's the governor of New York State, a clear message that this has to happen in order for us to send our taxes or tax dollars, et cetera, you know, to the state to fund X, Y, and Z. That's where the demand part comes in. So there's a lot of sharpening that we have to do in response to the clear retaliation that the MAGA movement is going to execute as their part of their response and their learning from what happened on Tuesday. And best believe they are very concerned, and they're not going to sit back and wait for things to happen. They're going to use all the force and all the forces at their disposal to ensure the outcome that they want, which is, you know, the United States remaining under the dictatorship of white heterosexual men. Let's be clear.
Appreciate that, Kali Ankuno, one of our guests this afternoon. I want to turn the floor over to Malin Abdullah. One of the things that I looked at on Tuesday are two victories which could lead to conflict if we're not careful. With the electing of the two governors in Virginia and in New Jersey, we're talking about the reemergence of the established Democrats, folks whose policies were such that they were kind of like, you know, dragging their feet on a lot of things. I think Pastor Mike talked about the contentious relationship he had with the governor in Virginia, that she was a main obstacle for getting things passed when she was serving in Congress around police reform, right? Gavin, you know, as I pointed out, just vetoed a bill on reparations. Gavin is the one that signed a bill to kind of go after ethnic studies. And, you know, and these were largely hard-fought battles, you know, to get these things into position. But at the same time, with Mamdani winning and seeing this type of social movement, what was being framed was like, well, what is the Democratic Party? Is it the established ones who won in Jersey? Is it this new radical, you know, side of it, the AOC, Bernie Sanders, you know, Thorhan Mamdani? That could be a distraction if we got this infighting around Democrats and who's going to be the head of the party, or it may be a necessary changing of the guard. How do you see things in, you know, in building off of some of the stuff that Kali said? Because again, you're in a place where you're seeing both forces, you know, at play.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And of course, I agree with everything that Kali said. And I think the main point that I would underscore is that voting is not enough, right? We have to vote and organize. That we've seen, we've witnessed, and continue to experience what happens when you elect somebody to office and then leave them there, right? So I think we could have a tale of two cities. If Mamdani does the right thing and people stay activated and mobilized and usher him into his highest self, where he's not apologizing to NYPD, right? Remind him of who he is and what he's grounded in as an Africana studies major, as founder of the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter on his college campus, and as somebody who has been a part of organizing and has that background, it becomes really, really important that we stay activated in the streets, but also hold him accountable. And holding people accountable is not a bad thing. That is, I think, a radical act of love, saying, you know, we want you to be here, but we want you to be here for us. And so that's really, really important. So voting alone is not the answer. We have to vote and we have to organize. Tale of two cities is this. Karen Bass comes out of community organizing, right? And and really comes out of community organizing, founder of Community Coalition, had a strong background, understood that more police in South Central Los Angeles don't keep us safe. What keeps us safe is more resources. She knows that. And who is in her ear are the establishment Democrats, the capitalist class, the more liberal ones of the capitalist class, but that's the direction that she's gone in. And really it's heartbreaking to see the direction LA has gone in, where, you know, the argument has become we want ICE out so that LAPD can abuse their own folks instead of having the National Guard or ICE or Homeland Security do it. We can beat our own people is really what the underlying message is. If you look even at what happened after the Dodger victories, is LAPD on horseback beating people with batons, yeah, right? And so I think the point that Kali is making is something that we all need to take to heart, that we can't go Mamdani was elected in New York or Prop 50 passed in California and just leave it, or that these governors got in, which we should talk, I'll mention, get back to in just a second. We have to stay mobilized and activated. And I think that's why the Trump regime is coming after not only labor unions, but organizing, right? That presidential memo that specifically names Black Lives Matter and Antifa, like Antifa is somebody he can come after. I don't know how he's gonna find them. Good luck with that, right? But, you know, he's coming after organizing as well as labor unions, and we have to take it as a war declared on the movement. And in the words of our beloved, one of our leaders, organizers, and scholars, right, Baba A.K. Akinyele Umoja, we will shoot back. Well, that's actually Robert Williams' words, right? We will shoot back. So war has been declared on us. Are we going to just let the target be on our backs, or are we going to organize ourselves? The question about the governors, I think that you raised, Davey, is really important as well. That remember, Mamdani still hasn't been given a stamp of Democratic Party approval, right? That he represents Democratic socialists, right? Like much like Martin Luther King did when he was alive before they tried to sanitize his life, right? He represents Democratic Socialists. The two governors which were elected represent mainstream Democratic Party. Gavin Newsom is mainstream Democratic Party. So it doesn't mean we don't align on things like Prop 50, because we have to beat back like blatant fascism. But it means that I think Mamdani's win actually is a reminder that voters actually don't want, and the people don't want, either of the corporate parties. We don't want the Republican Party, and we don't want the Democratic Party. But I think we're so, because we see what blatant unfettered fascism looks like, if the only option is, you know, more palatable oppression, then we'll take that. And I think that that's what the election of the governors in Virginia and New Jersey represents. So the people got to stay in the streets. We got to demand something beyond the corporate parties. And we have to start working towards our vision, or continue to work towards our vision, recognizing that the Trump regime, as well as the liberals, got targets on our backs.
My concern, that's the voice of Maleen Abdullah. If you're just tuning in, we also have Kali Ankuno from Cooperation Jackson as our guest. You know, we've seen this ship before. We've seen this boat. We saw it after Obama. We saw it locally in key elections. There's a lot of excitement and a lot of movement around electing somebody. And I hear what Kali's saying, I hear what you're saying when you say that we have to be out in the streets, but that's a big ask for a lot of people. And I'm trying to see if there's a couple of intermediary steps that can be taken immediately that move in that direction. But, you know, people spent, the past year or so really organizing, phone banking, doing all these sorts of things. Money was raised, and there was a sense of like, this is the purpose. We're gonna fight back, but we're gonna do it through this election. Now that we got the election, you're saying we still gotta organize, and now there isn't any leader per se. even when you talk about holding him accountable, that's still in an electionary type of thing. And I think that's not the same as what Kali is talking about. It's like, you won't have to ask him to be accountable if the movement is still doing what it should be doing. And I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to get folks to really scale up. Are there steps that we can take so that tomorrow morning people can go phone banking and knocking on doors? But this time, Kali, this time, Melina, there is nobody that we're trying to get into office.
The office is secondary.
Yes.
Right. It in the grand scheme of things, I would argue that it is secondary. But we have to contend with most of our folks view politics as elections. That is what we've all been taught. And those of us who have a different perspective is largely because we learned it either through the school of hard knocks, right? Or studying on our own, things that happen in the course of our people's history, or studying things that happen internationally. So people voted for relief. Let's be clear about that. And the point that you are raising, Davey, about who does the Democratic Party represent? Who does it belong to? It is a big tent umbrella that incorporates a number of forces, as Melina was pointing out, who actually don't share a lot of strategic alignment or interests. They may share a range of tactical alignments and interests. But even within that, right, there are predominant forces which control that apparatus, which are tied to various wings of capitalism, of capital. Hmm. Now, those of us who are subject to capital, who don't own or control it or dictate what it do, we are often left in an unorganized state to just parlay. You know, for I'm gonna steal from Gerald Horn here. You know, who's got the least bloody shirt, right? And it's not gonna put their foot on our neck, most immediately, or at least that we could talk to about. Could you take that knife out an inch or two? Or let me breathe. Loosen your grip and let me breathe a little. We have to. The piece around you invoked me talking about the Building Fight series that we've been doing, and I know y'all been re-airing. That whole series is about what can people do who are not tied or tethered, particularly to the Democratic Party, who are not part of that apparatus, but are working in a number of different ways in their community to improve their material conditions and their life chances. And we are now in a state with that whole premise that I'm arguing for. We don't have the political organizations that existed in this society in the 60s, in the 50s, the 40s, the 30s, 20s, right? We don't have a mass socialist party. We don't have a communist party. We don't have, trade unions, that represented at their height, represented 25% of all the workers in the United States. We are now down to less than 10% in most fields and sectors. And that's very concentrated. And so, but what we do have, and what we've seen over the last 20 years, we have a consistent upsurge of folks, who have a far more horizontal understanding of trying to exercise control in their life, who build collectives, who build, farms in their communities, urban farms, who do mutual aid work, that are much, much more loose in their organization, but come together to meet kind of needs. And we've seen a tremendous upsurge of that. We saw it around Katrina. We saw it around Hurricane Sandy. We saw it in the summer of 2020, with all of 2020. We saw it in the mass upsurge of mutual aid that happened during the first couple of months of the pandemic, right? We saw people doing that in the summer around the George Floyd rebellion. of folks organizing mutual aid pieces. So that knowledge is there, that impulse is there. It is our task and our duty to try to coordinate that and put all those forces together in a coherent program that feeds upon each other, that builds upon each other and aggregates power to be able to fight back against the state, against the reactionary forces. And be clear, when I mean reactionary forces, I'm talking about both of the dominant tendencies that represent capital in the political way. That's the fascists, or the American Fascist Party, which is the Republicans, and the neoliberals, and their particular version of a hyper-aggressive capitalism. That's the Democratic Party and the liberals within it, the neoliberals in particular. Yeah. We have to organize against both of them, Davey, but the practical pieces that you're talking about, that goes back to all the work it's going to take to build the mutual aid, all the work it's going to take to build the security forces in our community, that at least start with, you know, letting people know how the police are moving, how ICE are moving, how the ATF and the other forces are moving, so folks have enough time to either get out of Dodge or to build, you know, mass walls of resistance or the other strategies and tactics that people, you know, may employ. But then the critical thing is to figure out, once we have this network, how do we go on the offensive? But don't discount, Davey, those small steps of us meeting with each other, gathering with each other, and figuring out first and foremost how do we defend each other, because if we don't do that and we don't build the relationships, we can't take the forward advances in the forward press to hold people accountable or to push them further than where they're willing to go.
I appreciate that. I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to ask you to maybe share with us some critical lessons that were learned in Jackson, where you have radical organizations like yourself and you have close friends and comrades who got into leadership position in government, and how and what should we glean from that? Because in many ways, that's a scaled up version. We're activists, we're organizers, and we got our guy in office. What does that mean now? And we should have learned some lesson from Obama, but there probably are some sharper lessons to glean from Jackson. And I'll come back to you with that as we wrap up. But I want to bring you into the back, Melina. And as we were talking, one of the things that has not really been mentioned in either of the conversations we had is the role of these technocrats, these tech barons, you know, $1 trillion companies in our state, you know, right here, Silicon Valley. The role of Google, the role of Facebook and Meta, you know? I mean, here's a guy that removed like, what, seven or 800, you know, hours worth of video showing Israeli violations, right? That's Mark Zuckerberg. And I bring this up because if we're talking about continuing that fight against fascism, well, that fight is right here in our backyard. That is Silicon Valley at this point. That is the surveillances that they put up. That's the tactics that they're using. That's the aid that they're rendering to this administration. And should we, you know, if we're going to do a no kings type of thing, should that be the target now? These people, they have names, you know, they live here, you know, they crafted their politics here. Stephen Miller's from here. Russell Voigt, author of Project 2025, is from here. All these folks that have been kissing the ring and making life absolutely miserable, the Elon Musk, they all are here. And so should California, you know, have a strategy to really hold those folks accountable? And do we start to really organize around that? All of us have been censored. All of us have been blacklisted. All of us have been shadow banned. All of us have been frustrated that these tools that we help contribute to their bottom line are no longer viable tools that we can use for organizing. But this goes beyond that, because these are the folks that are putting up these, you know, the surveillance state. That's them. So do we start to deal with the tech folks whose names are not being mentioned in any of this stuff?
Sure. Yeah. So I want to say yes, and I want to kind of couch it in some of what's already been said, right? So the question you asked to Kali about organizing, I don't want to be these glasses actually are rose colored. I'm not only seeing through rose colored glasses, right? That in this moment of crisis, people have stepped up. And we have to be really clear that although cameras and mainstream media have turned away, I can speak for Black Lives Matter grassroots. We're the largest we've ever been. We have 52 chapters that are active around the country and around the world, right? So I just got back from the Sweden chapter, right? I'm in Lubbock, Texas now with four other chapters fighting for Erskine Jenkins, right? Fighting for justice in his name. We're the largest we've ever been. That when you think about the protests and the demonstrations that have been happening, that there are more people out in the streets than I've seen on a consistent basis. So I think that when we talk about what's happening, when we talk about the attacks on Black folks, on Indigenous folks, on working class folks, we're not just taking it. When we talk about ICE raids in California, you know, part of the reason that the National Guard was kind of sent packing is because the people were physically fighting them in the streets every single day. I know because I was there, right? And so we were out in the streets and we are out in the streets and nobody's necessarily broadcasting it, but it's happening. When you talk about what's happening in California, I want to lift up organizations like Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, where people like Hamid Khan are doing exactly what you said and showing, you know, the way in which technology, a lot of it being generated from California, is a part of this overall regime, which is seeking to hoard resources and create conditions where working class people are super oppressed. And so we have to remember that that's happening. And I think that when you say these people are people who live in California, again, it's not getting mainstream media attention, but we have been targeting people like Elon Musk. We have been targeting people like Stephen Miller. We do stops at their houses. We do stops at their businesses. I know that now people are talking about this blackout, but Black Lives Matter grassroots has been blacking out what we call the period of Black Xmas from Black Friday to January 1st for 12 years now, since 2014, in the name of John Crawford, who was killed inside a Walmart store in Ohio, highlighting the way in which white capitalism requires police violence and saying we need to boycott white capitalism, instead invest our dollars in building Black, right? Building community. And so we always say build Black, buy Black, bank Black. So build Black first. If you got to buy something, buy with Black Black businesses that benefit Black community. So no Roscoe's, right? Right. And bank Black. So I think that can happen. It's not getting as much attention as it should, but it's also a reason why that same presidential memo and the press conference that went with it not only targeted organizations like Black Lives Matter and movements like Antifa, which what's the opposite of anti-fascist is fascist, which is, you know, very telling, but also targeted tactics like they're gonna crack down on people going to the homes of elected officials and business leaders. But that's all right, we're unafraid. And we're going to continue to organize. And so we invite people to, again, in Kwame Ture's words, organize, 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 get involved in an organization like Cooperation Jackson, like Black Lives Matter Grassroots, like Anti-Police Terror Project, because that's really the answer.
Appreciate that, Melina Abdullah. Colleague, we have like a couple of minutes left, and I know I probably asked you a complicated question that I might have to have you come back, but are there lessons learned from Jackson, where you have, you know, movements that have ascended to power? And, you know, what does that mean when you still have folks on the ground like yourselves, but folks that you work with who are in leadership? What can we learn from that?
Oh, there's a lot to learn. A whole lot.
We'll have you come back
and four or five minutes is not gonna cover it.
But a couple of practical things, you know.
You know, a couple of practical things. for a movement like ours, you know, which comes out of a more concentrated kind of cadre or orientation, being clear internally about what the aims and objectives are, and having agreement and alignment on how that then plays out in your organizing work. That is key, right? And so there's a constant struggle for clarity that has to be engaged. And we, in a collective sense, often fell short in that regard. And that led to a number of different splits and divisions, which weakened us. And it took some time for that to completely shake out in a way that led to our folks who were holding public office to be removed from office, right? Because even though Chokwe Antar was in office for 8 years, the third go-round, he lost, right? And that was a blow to our movement. But only in so much as, you know, we now, it now to a degree, I'm gonna be, you know, as Melinda was saying, you put the rose-colored glasses on. That should be, and it should lead us to a deeper practice of self-reflection, to learn, like, where did we go wrong? You know, what did we do it not do correctly? And then how do we correct it? Because we're not leaving the scene, right? Ain't nobody going nowhere. Yeah. The pieces, but we have to recognize that all of us in one degree or another made some mistakes, and then how do we correct the mistakes? You know, but one of the critical things, I just like the piece, is something that you said, and it's for a later show. You know, I want folks to understand that when people like Mamdani, or when people like Chokwe Antar Lumumba, or Chokwe Senior, Chokwe Lumumba, when we win these offices, we are not actually assuming real state power and control. We have a temporary, what you win is a temporary ability to shape some of the decisions that the state makes to enable how goods and services move. So one of the things you've heard me say, and I'm gonna repeat it again here, what you win within this framework is you're trying to manage the contradictions of capitalism. And we need to recognize, this is one of the points of clarity, the contradictions of capitalism actually and ultimately cannot be managed. And what that leads you there, once you, I think if we have some clear understandings of that, you'll stop putting a focus on what Mamdani needs to do, and then re-put the focus on, he is there to enable certain decisions that the mass movement wants enforced. And we need to back the play of making sure that those decisions or distinctions are clear to all the different decisions making, be it in the city council, be it in the state apparatus, what those choices are, make them clear, narrow them down. Right, that if this doesn't happen, these are the consequences that will happen from you not moving in our favor. The same way, you know, if we don't do certain things on the city level to say, like, appease Amazon, what do? They take all their toys and they leave. Right? And I'm going to punish you that way because you didn't go in my favor. We have to make it on our side just as clear. But it takes organizing to do that, and it takes organizing with political education to make that clear as possible as to what the choices need to be in order for working class people, black, brown, white, pink, and everything in between, right, to make the situation better for us. And so the key lesson is, I think, in Jackson, I think all too often people just kind of assume that since we have our people in power, they are going to take care and make everything right. And it was not our collective responsibility to keep working to press and make things. And we got divided on that. So I'm offering the lesson, let's be focused on where our power and our, it really lies, is with us. and that we are utilizing a very limited apparatus, which is designed, you know, to exploit people. That is the U.S. state. We are trying at best to blunt its edges. And if we are doing our work effectively, we put people in places that stall it from being as brutal and exploitative as it normally is. But they are also supposed to do things to enable the movements to have more democratic space to operate within, to change the social power and the social relations which give the capitalist power. And we're trying to remove that. That is, so okay. you're trying to enable the social movements. That is ultimately the key lesson. And why I phrase it, I'm going to go back. Why I phrase it.
Colleague, we're going to run out of time.
Long lesson. So the next time, we'll be back.
Yeah. That's the voice of Kali Nkuno. And definitely we'll have you back to unpack some of that. Malina Abdullah, I want to thank you for joining us. Is there a website that we can get a hold of you real quick?
Sure, blmgrassroots.org, blmgrassroots.org, and blmgrassroots on all social media.
We'll have to have you all back, but we appreciate you all coming on this afternoon. Malina Abdullah, Black Lives Matter Grassroots, and Kali Nkuno from Cooperation Jackson. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. Ralph for now. Peace.
Let us. Ha. Hey, hey, hey. Ho, ha, 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 ha. Hard Knock Radio. East, west, hard north, south. Radio, conectados. Man. Every set, every hood. Barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up. Stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs. One love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We tryna make real music so the people can relate.
Yeah. Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Get K-Rooed up. Get K-Rooed up because it's K-Roo time. K-Roo time. Get K-Rooed up. Get K-Booed up because it's K-Boo time! K-Boo time!
This is Bird Note. Mustafa Santiago Ali has been an environmental activist and policymaker for nearly three decades. The work has taught him that people can drive change with art and storytelling, which inspired him to write this poem called "The Birds Been Praying for Us."
They rise before we do, not just early, but wholly. Wings draped in dawn light, they pull songs from the silence like prophets pulling dreams from dust. A cardinal ain't just red for beauty. She bleeds purpose into every sky she touches. They tend the garden we forgot, scattering seeds we too busy to see, pollinating prayers we too proud to speak. Their flight is scripture. If we just read the air, a lesson in letting go, and rising anyway, and trusting the wind to catch what's real. And when they sing, baby, that ain't just music, it's medicine, a sound bath for the soul, reminding us even broken things can build nests and birth miracles. I was thinking about birds and how they are nature's messengers. They do all these amazing things, and they also mirror the health of the planet. And if we remember that interconnectedness, we'll do things differently. I still believe that we will get there one day.
Hear more from Mustafa about art and environmental activism when you listen to Season 7 of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app. For Bird Note, I'm Jonice Franklin.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH